This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there are a chosen few that will stand against the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness. These are the voyages of the crew of Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. And tonight, the presenters we have here are Sonia and Albert. And this week, we're looking into the field of games and how...
Game on.
How games have affected the landscape of science fiction and horror, and kind of how they've crossed over from kind of the mainstream games have become films, and also a little bit about the classification system of video games in Australia at the moment.
And we'll also be looking at, talking to Helen Stuckey here from the ACME down at Federation Square, and she'll be chatting to us about the Independent Games Festival of 2009 that is presently down at the Federation Square at ACME. So that'll be excellent. And we'll also look at homophobia in games and how that affects our community. And I'll also be looking at an ancient classic, Tron. Yes, it's been a while, so it was interesting to review that.
Oh, yes.
So we'll look at that and the history of some games coming up as well tonight on Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Yeah. And first up, we have Helen Stuckey here in the studio with us tonight.
Welcome, Helen. It is a bit late. I do apologise, but we're trying to get another earlier time, aren't we?
It's a good one time day for science fiction.
It is a bit, creeping of the night.
Yeah, the midnight hour.
So thanks so much for coming in tonight. And Helen, you're the curator for the Independent Games Festival 2009 that's now showing at ACME. And it's on till February the 14th.
February the 14th,
finishes.
Yes.
So how long has it been playing at ACME?
It opened on the 8th of December.
Okay.
This is actually the fourth time ACME's done Best of the Independent Games Festival. The Independent Games Festival is actually a competition that happens each year at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, for people who are unaware of it, if you could kind of imagine a Sundance for games, this is where a chance where the independents get to showcase their work.
Mm.
And the independent developers are so important to the sort of health of game culture, because a lot of sort of new ideas, new creativity, experimentation comes from that sector.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. Very interesting, actually, because I guess a lot of the games that most people are exposed to are, the mainstream sort of games that Albert plays.
Yeah, they kind of repeat a lot of the same genres. There's not a lot of innovation kind of as far as kind of the more popular games out there.
Well, games are such a kind of big industry now. It's a multimedia industry, sort of multi-million dollar industry. Sorry, not a molecule. Naturally, it's a multimedia industry. So it's a billion dollar industry and has a really blockbuster mentality. So it's risk averse.
Yeah.
So we'll often say, when you look at one of the top selling games now, they'll be, Silent Hill number 4. I don't play survival horror games. It's a shame to be on a horror show. I shouldn't really talk to them.
Halo 3. We're actually on the science fiction aspect, perhaps. You can look at that.
I'll be safe there.
Side. Yep.
So you're seeing a lot of kind of risk adverse things happening with the mainstream game. So it's really in the independent sector that you're getting those kind of exciting experimental games. And then you have games like the game Portal, which was just a huge game success for Valve. It was in the orange box packed with Half-Life 2. Yet that was originally a student game that showed at the Independent Games Festival called Nubecular Drop, which the Valve team picked up and took on that student team and remade it into a game
Portal. That's the thing, isn't it? It's always the more creative and artistic independent types, and it then gets, I wouldn't say hijacked, but almost co-opted.
Well, some of the designs.
And
for the independent sector, they have the opportunity to experiment, and it's a really... and to try new ideas.
It's much more freed up.
It's much more free. Yeah.
Do you think it will you know, survive that way?
Oh, totally. I think things like the popularity of iPhone and digital distribution like Steam is actually making it much easier for people to find these games and to play these games. Previously, it was really just, you know, download on your PC and you really had to know about them and find them. But now you've got things like, you know, Xbox Arcade and, and you know, digital download on the PlayStation, where you're seeing, like, Braid is on the Xbox. I've got to get their platforms right as a digital download, and that was an independent Games Festival winner from a few years ago. Flow, which is an independent game that's actually never been in the festival, but a very important independent game, it's on the PlayStation downloads and now on the PSP. So you see them kind of become more available and crossing over.
Yes, yeah. Even the technical aspects seem to be taken on board, don't they? How did you get involved in the festival?
I got involved in games when I was working for Film Victoria.
Oh, okay.
And I was working with artists making interactive screen-based works, and which was an exciting area to be in, but I couldn't really understand why we weren't sort of celebrating games and the local Australian games industry, which is quite important. So I was working at Acme after that, and in the time I was there, I was campaigning actively for Acme to take more interest in playing games. And I was particularly interested in the independent sector, and so I used to go to the Game Developers Festival to see the Independent Games Festival, and now, of course, I'm a judge at the Independent Games Festival, so that's lovely.
That's exciting. That's really cool. So how long has ACME been actually involved in the independent aspects?
We've been doing a showcase of the best of the games now since 2005.
That's great. I didn't know that. That's excellent. 2005. Great. I believe it's the third collaboration for ACME for the IGF. Is that correct?
I think so.
Okay.
We missed a few years ago.
Won't test you too hard.
It is a bit, isn't it? And do you think that there is a so-called minimalist revolution? Because I was...
A minimalist revolution?
Yes,
games. Oh, I like the idea. I love a single-button game myself. Oh. That's a game that you play...
It's old school. Yeah.
I think that... And there's been some really lovely game design challenges recently around single-button games.
Yeah, excellent.
And they're fantastic for handheld devices. Just have a single button. And I love the abstract graphics of 8-bit games, and I think there's a really strong appreciation for those that... And everyone who grew up with them or has since, you know, learned to love them. I think they have a really strong aesthetic. And I think all of this stuff just reflects that for us now, games are just cultural artifacts. They're not children's pastimes. They're not toys. No. They're not unusual. They're the stuff that we grew up with and the stuff that we want to spend time with and we want to make things in ourselves.
They're like, cultural sort of furniture, really. Yeah. They are part of our lives.
They're part of our vocabulary, like cinema is and television.
Yeah, That is so true.
And the landscapes just change so much from so quickly with the kind of social media and I kind of probably would agree that the games have you do have some that become more simplified, you know, with Apple and their use of the iPhone and having things haptic feedback and where everything's just by touch, where getting back away from all these 15 button controllers.
Well, look at the success of the Wii, and what's true. The Wii's been so phenomenal, and it's actually just opened up games to a whole new audience who previously weren't interested in mastering a controller but are quite happy to just use the kind of...
And they're physically interacting as well. Mm. So that's obviously something that
and
has
with
been
the,
missing.
The next generation of game controllers that they're looking at now, things like Project Natal, which are just gesture-based.
Yeah.
So you actually don't have a controller, which is, you know, what we're expecting to see coming the next 12 to 18 months. Mm. That's a whole other kind of area of kind of gameplay and interface design that, again, will be just so much more open to a casual player.
Yeah.
Cool. That's great, Helen. Look, we've just got a few couple of messages, and we'll come right back.
You're on Sci-Fi and Scream with Sonia and Albert.
And Helen.
And Helen, we've got a special guest, Helen, from ACME tonight.
I've actually left ACME. I teach at the games program at RMIT now.
Oh, okay.
I still work with ACME on their games content, which is a big thrill for me.
That is great.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, excellent. So do you think that the independent games is a place where the future of games can be seen or observed, being born in the gaming culture? I mean, you kind of touched on that earlier, the influences.
It's certainly watched by everyone in the industry, and you see a lot of designers and certainly a lot of publishers looking at the works that come out of the festival, looking for new talent. And certainly if you're making independent games, I highly encourage you to submit your work. Or if they have a student showcase, so if you're studying games and making work as part of your studies, you should definitely try and submit that to show in the Independent Games Festival.
And do you actually encourage yourself, like Australian designers and or programmers, and travel with them at all?
No, that would be nice. Australian, they for the first time ever, they had a game developers conference in China at the end of last year in October. And they had a small independent games festival attached to that, organised by the same group. And that was actually won by an Australian designer called Farbs with his game Captain Forever, which if you Google that, you can check that out. Mm-hmm. So, and
well, it must be brilliant.
It's excellent.
How many people, do you know how many people he was up against?
On that team, like I wasn't involved in that, in the China-based one. So, but it's a great game, Captain Forever, and... Farbs actually makes a terrific game. So.
And he's based in Melbourne?
In Brisbane.
Yeah. Okay.
Melbourne can't have everything.
No, Melbourne can't have everything.
We have Brisbane and Melbourne in Australia share the game development industry. So
that's interesting.
It's pretty big, Melbourne.
But it's based in Melbourne and Brisbane.
Mm. So. Is that because they have the polytechnics or
I think it's because they have the beaches
education up
and
there.
They can attract those European game designers.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, inside info.
Very interesting. Yeah. All right. And where does this festival go to next?
The best of is just an exhibition that we do here at ACME. So the 2010 festival will be happening in March in San Francisco.
Okay. And then it will be
and
probably
then,
in Australia this time next
hopefully
year.
Hopefully ACME will be, doing another showcase of that coming up soon. So that will be...
That'll be great.
...worth watching out for. But people can certainly learn more about the Independent Games Festival from their site.
Okay.
And ACME's doing an ongoing series of games programs and events because they're very committed to games. And obviously in the permanent exhibition Screen World, you can see
that's fantastic there.
A little history of games and a series of displays attached around games.
Do they have Pong?
They have a Pong versus tennis game, which is actually an installation display.
I haven't been in to see that part of it.
Which tries to match the kind of changing kind of graphics and play styles of tennis from Pong to kind of virtual tennis.
I much prefer that to the Australian Open, personally, but that's just my point of view.
Yeah.
And so what are you up to now?
I'm teaching in the games program at RMIT, which is a degree course for students wishing to study games design.
And what's the course? How long does that run for?
It's a 3-year course.
3 years.
We run, we've got a degrees in digital art, in games graphics design and games graphics programming.
Yep.
And the students from those degrees work together to create games. So it's like a sort of industry model.
Right. And it has that supportive aspect, like RMIT seems to have that with filmmaking too, video and digital.
Yeah, we try to get them lots of contact with industry. And
That's great.
As well as encouraging them to take it places industry hasn't been taking things.
What places do you mean?
I don't know. I think that's, I'm very excited because this year there are 2 RMIT student games in the Independent Games Festival.
That's great.
Showcase. Mm-hmm. Yes. Actually, it's a good year for Australia. There's some Swinburne games in there as well.
Wow. So there weren't any originally in the
there weren't. Haven't previously been any.
This is the first time. What do you think that is? What's behind that?
Maturity of our courses here and just a kind of a growing appreciation of kind of the importance of the independent game sector.
Yes, the alternative
that,
aspect.
You know, that there's real possibilities to do interesting
Excellent.
Things.
Excellent. Okay. And, well, obviously you're a woman and you're involved in this sort of field. What's that like? I mean, in an independent field, it's probably more open, I guess. but what attracted
women
you to it?
Women are underrepresented in the video games industry, and I think that the more women who become involved in it, the better games we'll get. I think that they do bring something to games design. Our course is very well attended by women, so I think
you've got a good demographic.
I think the future looks good, and I know some extraordinary, wonderful, and creative women in the industry who are contributing a lot. So it has been one of those industries that has been very male dominated, but I think as it matures, that'll change too.
Mm. All right,
because certainly we're just as many girls play games now.
I think it's definitely a growing area, and it would be good to see, definitely more females in there.
And nobody thinks that Girls for Games are pink anymore. So
yes,
fortunately, we've got past
pink
that
joysticks.
Era.
Just
making cupcakes or dressing up a doll. So that
cooking mum is quite fun.
That kind of brings us to the question of what games are you playing at the moment, or is there?
I'm really looking forward to playing Mass Effect 2, which I haven't started.
Just released a couple of days ago.
No, today.
Today, yeah.
So, but I have some work to do before I'm allowed to play any games. I've just finished Drake's Uncharted, which I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And Pixel Junk Eden, one of the games that's actually in this exhibition, I'm still playing that quite a lot, actually. Yeah. So, which is just a really nice meditative game. And so is Osmos, another game in the Independent Games Festival show, which I also play to relax.
Well, it's good to know that you actually, you enjoy the things that you've been promoting, I guess, and curating for. Definitely.
It's the problem with games is they take so long to play.
Yes.
It's all part of research and development, though,
it's
isn't it?
It's so immersive and time-consuming, which is kind of why, for people that don't play games, they don't really understand how involved you can get and how attached you can get to something that is so interactive compared to things like films and books. But do you kind of have an early memory of what you first played?
Lemmings was one of the games for me. It was one of the first games I remember not sleeping, just playing it through all the way through the night.
Oh, okay, yes.
Until I got stuck and couldn't go on. And it was before the internet, so you couldn't, Google a walkthrough.
Yes, you couldn't get help. You couldn't ask other people about. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was it.
It was a lonelier pursuit.
It was.
Wasn't it, back then?
It's so scary. But I can remember playing games like kind of SimCity and Marble Madness.
Great. Well, that's great, Helen. Thank you so much for tonight.
My pleasure.
Yeah, coming on. And do you have any words of wisdom to a young programmer or designer out there?
Oh, just keep making stuff. That's the important thing. Yeah.
Keep making it.
Keep making it and share it with your peers. Oh, and user test it.
Yes, that's I know a few testers out there, and that's kind of one of the obviously very time-consuming, but one of the unsung areas of kind of game development. That's you always need to find these bugs and glitches.
But not even just that, just for something that feels so natural and right for you, feel that way for the next
person. That's right, you need to kind of appeal.
Because I guess you've been involved, if you're the person that's made it, you're involved with it, it's your baby, and like any newborn baby, it could be actually hideous. But in your eyes, it's beautiful.
Yes, it's your baby.
Oh, that's a great analogy. Sorry.
Your creation.
To all those babies.
It just might
there.
Be impenetrable to, to
maybe,
others.
That's a better one. Yes. Okay, look, it's been great to have you on so late tonight, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
All the best for your future.
Thank you.
And what you do in the gaming world, and especially in the independent areas. We look forward to finding out more about that and sharing it with our audience. And it's been a pleasure. Yes. Thank you very much.
Good luck with the rest of your show. It's good to have shows on games. And I think gamers are incredibly creative people, and I think that's something that's an unsung thing too.
Those brains of theirs. Can be quite interesting. And also, hopefully they're watching. I'm not watching, listening tonight.
Yes.
While they're playing. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam with Sonia and Albert. And just
before those messages, we were speaking to Helen Stuckey from RMIT and ACME.
Yeah, she's at RMIT now. So yes, that's right. I didn't know that, people. No? So that's
oh, well,
cool.
She has been the curator for the yeah. ACME exhibition.
Yeah, the independent one, which runs to the 14th of February. So get along down into the basement there and definitely have a go.
And now we've got a little bit of a review.
Just a bit of a review yeah. of the IGF. Yeah. Best of the Independent Games Festival 2009. I keep wanting to say 2009. Because I say 2010. It's kind of out there. Yeah. And it's at ACME, of course, down at Federal Square. So even though it was a brilliant day, I went down there on Sunday. It was a lovely sunny day outside and it seemed strange to be going down indoors. To a basement, basically in a grey basement, mm-hmm. to play games. But it was in a gallery. They call them galleries now.
Yes.
For games. And
because they're artwork, of course.
Well, these ones are. Yeah. Interesting. And the idea is, what should video games be? That's the blurb that was on the inside of the 2-page black and white brochure. Now, I sat down at the first monitor computer, which just happened to be not occupied, as it seems. And the game that I played was Blueberry Garden, and it was designed in 2009 by Erik Svendag of Sweden, and it's the grand prize winner for the IGF for 2009, and it's a minimalist and flat two-dimensional illustrative game. Mm-hmm. So it's quite naive in its rendering, as far as the figure goes, but as far as that goes, it didn't actually put me off. The opposite was true. It made me quite curious about the game and why would a grown-up depict such a game in such a way, because there's no frills to this.
So simplistic.
It's not three-dimensional, it's two-dimensional, and it's like a child's drawing.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. The problem is I had a bit of trouble with the simplistic instructions on the desk next to me of how to play the game. I found that they were a bit too minimalist.
Not enough detail. Not enough.
It could be just me and my dyslexia, I don't know. I probably would have liked to have passed on that, but I gave it a go and it was pretty intriguing. Basically the idea is it's just one platform.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about collecting blueberries, of course, because yeah. it's called Blueberry. Mm-hmm. And collecting those, and every time you do, you can go up a level, yep. which are just these like cross-section levels and gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And you just hop up or jump. You get to jump up and go through doorways. If you collect rocks, you can stack them mm-hmm. and climb up until you get... I didn't get very far, of course, because I kept dropping my rocks. And they make a noise when you drop them.
Oh, okay.
Not a rock noise, but a more of a hollow sort of thudding sound, which is quite cute.
Mm-hmm.
So the methodology of this is very simple, and it reminded me of much more simpler times.
Yeah.
Much more simpler times. So you pick up and gobble on the berries and you turn blue, which is quite cute, the little character does.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I didn't get far enough to be able to find out what happens at the end.
Oh, okay.
But certainly I found it very relaxing. I guess because it's so stripped down bare and there's no, you know, all the non-essentials are there and the graphics are so simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like I was having a meditative brain cleanse while playing it.
Yeah.
It was very soothing and I thought, oh, I can't sit here all day. This is too relaxing. It's just not like me. And I thought, yeah, this is very Scandinavian. I could actually see how this game could be inside a certain Scandinavian franchise furniture lifestyle store, definitely. One day every home will have a game like this, I think. And along with their indoor self-replenishing permaculture gardens, I can see this would be beneficial in a home with children.
Mm-hmm.
Because of its relaxing, non-violent, non-threatening manner.
Yeah.
And it would be a great game for adults and children to share together that don't involve competition.
Oh, like, yes.
You know, this real, there's no real feeling of angsty competition.
Mm-hmm.
And Touche Bitches Online describes the new minimalism as follows. They say, minimalist texts embrace the core elements of their category. They're stripped to their essentials, highly economical. One component will serve multiple purposes. Less is more. There is almost a complete lack of adjectival phrases and a big use of basic sentence structures as to convey meaning, a bit like Philip Glass made music for games and rhythm. And Erik Svendag has made a game by isolating the explore and find item components of games. There is no significance beyond the function of just playing. And Bobby Johnson from the Guardian.co blueberrygarden.co.uk explained it thus. Blueberry Garden was so beautiful, I almost wanted to put it in a ribbon-wrapped box with a kitten and cry a little. A dainty little piece of indie magic. So I'd give this 3 out of 5 for its minimalist features and calmness and juiciness, if there's such a word. It certainly is different, and you can check out the game and more critiques of it if you go to ericsvendag.com/blueberrygarden.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's just one of the games. And there was another one called Brain Pipe 2009, described in the brochure as a hypnotic graphic support of a complex audio landscape that draws the player into the flow of the game. And it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And also very old school.
Yeah. Was there
the graphics
for the crowd that were at that exhibition, was there a lot of adults, or was there
a lot of adults with their kids, actually?
A lot of the kids. And so the games are still appeal to quite the young, the younger audience, they're easy enough to understand, to engage their attention.
I think parents were quite happy with these games too. There's nothing like they need to be overtly concerned about.
Of course.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
And I liked going down the eel type of wormhole for the Brain Pipe 2009.
Yeah.
That was fun. It reminded me of early Star Wars computer game that I played back in the day, where it's just simple. You've got the and it had a joystick.
An actual joystick,
Old school joystick.
And yes.
Well, you can get carried away playing those things. I was getting some looks. I thought, it's time to go and get an ice cream.
Too excited by these games.
Not squeeze that too hard. But so check those out.
Mm.
And a list of the games that are at the festival are Blueberry Garden, which I mentioned before.
Yep.
Brain Pipe 2009 by USA's Digital Eel. It was the winner of Excellence in Audio. Cortex Command, Data Realms, also from the US, are the winner in Technical Excellence. Euphloria, I think Helen mentioned that earlier, by Alex May and Rudolf Kremers from the UK. The Graveyard, 2009, Tales of Tales, Belgium. That was a bit too slow for me. Machinarium. How you say it.
Yeah.
She mentioned that one too, which was a Czech Republic entry and was the winner in the Excellence in Visual Art. And Mosaic Box from Cranks Productions in the Ukraine. That was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very childlike, where you had to remember a famous tune from a classical piece of music and then construct it.
Yeah, so it's a little bit
yourself.
More intellectual than these
rhythm-based
music games that are out in the moment.
It wasn't karaoke.
No.
That's what you think.
No.
And, so go along there. You've got a few days to go to see that.
That's very interesting.
At Acme.
And so, we've been talking a little bit about games and their influence on the science fiction and horror landscape. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9 with Sonia and Albert. And that last track you just heard was The Dandy Warhols with The Last High, which was from the Lara Croft Tomb Raider soundtrack, the second one, The Cradle of Life, which was released in 2003.
And I'm just going to have a quick look at some of the history or historical games. So it's just history part one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the big question is, where did these so-called video and computer games come from? That's kind of the angle I was thinking of. Was it A.S. Douglas's PhD degree from the University of Cambridge, which amounted to him making a tic-tac-toe game as part of his study on human-computer interaction? Was it that one? Douglas created the first graphical computer game, the tic-tac-toe. The game was programmed on a EDSAC vacuum tube computer, which had a cathode ray tube display. You might have seen those in old science fiction movies and actually in hospitals as well. They have used them.
Those with where they have those green lights and the bipping sound, like kind of like a radar.
Yeah, kind of submarines.
Thing. Yeah, that's
yeah, that's the one. Or was it William Higginbotham who created the first video game ever in 1958? His game was called Tennis for Two and was created and played on a Brookhaven National Laboratory oscilloscope in 1962. And Steve Russell invented Space War. Space War was the first game intended for computer use.
Mm-hmm.
So something else there. And it was a mainframe computer design. Or could it have been from 1971, Nolan Bushnell, together with Ted Dabney, who created the first arcade game? It was called Computer Space, based on Steve Russell's earlier game of Space War. The arcade game Pong was created by Nolan Bushnell as well, with the help of Al Alcorn. We've seen those around for years. Mm. Nolan Bushnell and Ted Dabney started what?
I don't know.
Starts with A.
A asteroid?
Atari computers. Atari, okay. In the same year, 1972. In 1975, Atari re-released Pong as a home video game. And I guess that's my first initial contact with video games, mm-hmm. was Pong.
Pong.
And Pong was certainly absolutely addictive in its day. Hard to believe that something so
simple,
incredibly minimalist, could be so addictive.
Yeah.
You had to have quite a bit of skill, believe it or not, back then.
Yeah.
The swing ball game looked pretty lonely in the backyard that year for me when Pong came out. And mm-hmm. then, you know, one knows what swing ball is. They'll know that it's nothing for hide and seek.
Okay.
It's not for their show, certainly.
No.
Yeah, I had an uncle who actually worked for a company called Sanyo.
Uh-huh.
And they brought out one of the first Pongs in New Zealand. Uh-huh. And I'm not talking about Rotorua. Mm-hmm. That stinks, of course. But he actually set it up on our television.
Oh, yes.
On our black and white TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I played it every day.
Oh, you sat in front of it cross-legged.
I wagged school to play Pong.
Mm.
And it just made that noise. You know the noise?
Bloop. Beep. The bloop.
Yep, it was cool. Okay, it's just history part two. In 1978, I think it really began with the release of Space Invaders by Japan's Tomohiro Nishikado, originally sold by the Taito Company. When it was produced in the US, it was made by Midway, which was a sub-enterprise of Bally Games.
Mm-hmm.
Space Invaders is one of the earliest shooting games and features two-dimensional graphics. I love those. The aim is to defeat waves of aliens with a laser cannon and earn as many points as possible. In designing the game, Nishikado drew inspiration from popular media of the time, which was Breakout, The War of the Worlds, and Star Wars, of course, because it came out in 78. Star Wars came out in 77.
Yep.
And to complete it, he had to design custom hardware and development tools because no one had done this before. It took a year for him to make it. Yeah. Though simple by today's standards, it was one of the forerunners of modern video gaming and helped expand the video game industry from a novelty to a global industry. Yeah, so it was very popular and successful when it released. Following its release, the game caused a temporary shortage of 100 yen coins in Japan. I'm serious. And by 2007, had earned Taito Company a US $500 million in revenue. And still, in the Guinness Book of World Records, it ranks as the top earning arcade game of all time.
And they keep all that money in those 100 yen coins, don't they?
In the arcade game itself.
Yes, yes.
You have to shake them, but you can actually... I shouldn't talk about this.
No?
But there is a way you can get the money out.
Oh, okay.
Get it back. And just as a little interesting point to add about Nishikado, Nishikado viewed games allowing the killing of virtual humans as immoral. He was totally against that. Just stick to aliens, killing aliens. But one of my very favourites would have to be Galaga. God, I loved that game when it came out. And it came out in 1981. It was a fixed shooting game developed again in Japan by the Namco company this time. And it was actually a sequel to a game called Galaxian, which came out in 79, which I played but not as exciting.
Not as a breakout as Galaga.
No. The objective of Galaga is to score as many points as possible by destroying insect-like enemies. That's always fun. And the player controls a fighter spaceship that can move from left to right along the bottom of the playing field. Enemies fly in groups into formation near the top of the screen. That's always fun.
Mm.
And then begin flying down. They make that great noise.
Noise? I don't remember the noise. From Galaga? Oh.
Like that, yeah.
The Galaga was before, you know, they had left and right, but they hadn't...
They just had those buttons.
Yeah, they didn't advance to the forward and back. That came a bit later, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Yeah. I gave up by that stage. So yeah, it had tractor beams. It had fighter ships. It was pretty complex.
Mm.
It wasn't Space Invaders. It was a lot more complex.
Oh yeah.
And talking about one of my other favourites. Talking about game movies. Mm-hmm. I know you're going to go into it later, but I'd like to just mention Extends by Canadian director David Cronenberg that came out in 1999,
mm-hmm.
The alternative or alternate reality-based game idea, which
kind of
really
like, yeah,
hasn't taken off.
The virtual reality.
So maybe in Sims or something like that.
Oh, Sims. Perhaps. Second Life. Kind of, yeah.
All right. Well, that's me, I think.
Mm, so a little bit of the history of games and where it all started, which we've come a long, long way from that. And
I think we're going back in some ways.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these classic games, they always kind of have a reemergence in the gaming world. People, they're classics for a reason. They always go back to that kind of style and that simplicity.
You can actually get arcade, I believe it's arcade games.
Yeah.
Retro arcade games on.
Yeah.
Which ones? Xbox, or I think, has them? Or?
Xbox. They also had things like that on the Nintendo consoles as well.
Mm, okay.
They're classic kind of Nintendo games are more the Mario and.
I guess they're retro now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Mario Brothers.
They're kind of retro in some way. You've been listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam with Sonia and Albert on Joy 94.9. We've been talking a little bit about games and the history so far of games in the science fiction and horror world. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9 with Sonia and Albert. Apologies for the cutting out of that music.
Attack of the Puppets. It must have been the puppets.
The puppets.
Or the puppet people.
The puppet people.
By the blow waves.
Oh, yes.
So maybe the puppet people got them.
Oh, yes. That might be true.
Careful of those sock puppets.
Yes. They're scarier than Chucky. So we've had an interview with Helen Stuckey. We've gone a little bit through the history of video games. And we're probably going to go a little bit more on the completely opposite path and see where we are with video games now, and especially in Australia, how they currently at the moment do not have an R rating classification for video games, which has drummed up a lot of controversy. So unless you've been living under a rock or you're one of the less than 20% of the population that doesn't have access to the internet, you're likely to know about the Australian Labor Party's plans to introduce mandatory internet filtering for all Australians. This is being pushed by Senator Stephen Conroy, who is the Minister for Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy. But aside from this issue affecting all internet users, which is a massive issue and could take up a whole show in itself, there's also the more relevant issue for this show of the classification of video games in Australia. The Office of Film and Literature Classification in Australia is basically the government body that classifies films, video games and publications that are shown, sold or hired out in Australia. According to the current classification system in place, there are three restricted classifications that apply to films. These are MA15+, where people under the 15 can only legally purchase or exhibit content under adult supervision. R18+, where people under 18 can't buy, rent or exhibit these films at all. And X18+, which only applies to sexual content that can legally be purchased in the ACT and Northern Territory. Although, of course, with the sex shops around at the moment, the enforcement of this is relaxed in the states. So these are the rules that apply to films. As for video games in Australia, there is no classification for games above MA15+. This means that any games coming out of the United States or Canada, where the Entertainment Software Rating Board, or ESRB, assigns age and content ratings to computer and video games, lack an equivalent rating to their adults only 18+, but also to their mature 17+ rating. So in order for any changes to this classification system to take place, there must be a unanimous decision by all the state and territory censorship ministers, who are usually attorneys general. The only attorney general that opposes the introduction of an R18 classification for video games is the South Australian Minister, Michael Atkinson. He is also the one that tried to block the release of a paper that canvasses the opinion of the Australian public on whether or not an R18 classification should be introduced. Fortunately for those that believe that adults should be able to read, hear and see what they want, which, funnily enough, is a line in the National Classification Code, the Australian government
recently released a discussion paper on December 14th last year, which summarises the key arguments for and against this R18 classification. So if you're interested in reading this document, we do have a link for the paper on our Facebook fan page, and you can actually even submit your own opinion on this matter, but deadlines do close on February 28th this year.
Not much time at all.
No, no. Mm-hmm. So they've given us probably about 2.5 months to...
When was it released? Like, when was the...
December 14th. Oh. Yeah, that's when they released this paper, and they released it because they conducted this certain research that realised that video games is an increasing industry in Australia, which didn't really need the research for that, but they wanted to... garner their opinions of the public, even though Michael Atkinson wanted to kind of quash that. So, you know, people that don't play games, of course, would think, you know, what's all the fuss about all this classification of video games? And even Michael Atkinson has said that, quote, "this issue has little traction with his constituents who are more concerned with real life issues than home entertainment in imaginary worlds." So, well, the Australian government, yeah, did realise that this is a big issue, and so they did want to release this paper. And, you know, to put it in the broad scope of things in relation to all other media, like films and books, according to the Game Developers Association of Australia, Australians spent $825 million in 2002 on games and software, game software and hardware, and this figure is ramping up yearly. And just as an analogy, if you're a film watcher rather than a games player, if the films did actually attract the same kind of restriction that the games do, then films like Bruno, Rambo, 30 Days of Night, Halloween, Saw, Hostel, The Hills Have Eyes, 300, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Short Bus, and even Hard Candy would be refused classification, and their distribution and exhibition would actually become a criminal offence.
Ken Park, you still can't see Ken Park.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yes, yes.
Can't get it on video either.
So that's a little bit about what the video games industry is in Australia at the moment, and how we don't have an R rating classification for it.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.